prostitution, sex trafficking, and porn. A closer look at Maine's sex industry. Since the Kennebunk prostitution story broke, a bright light has been focused on the issue of sex for hire in America and on the media's role in publicizing the names of so-called Johns. But apart from the media frenzy surrounding the scandal, are there any lasting issues around how sex businesses are regulated and how they affect the people who use them and work in them? My two guests would say yes, although they have different views on those issues. I'm Keith Shortall, and with me in the studio today, Lois Reckitt, Executive Director of Family Crisis Services, and Wendy Chapkis, Professor of Sociology and Director of Women and Gender Studies at the University of Southern Maine, who's written extensively on the subject. The business of sex. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listeners and by Packard Judd Kay, providing strategic marketing consulting, communications, research, and training services online at PackardJuddKay.com. By Beale Street Barbecue, bringing barbecue and blues to historic downtown Bath, because it's a long way to Memphis. Learn more at MaineBBQ.com. And by WBRC Architects Engineers, committed to providing outstanding solutions and value with offices in Bangor, Portland, and Sarasota, Florida, and online at WBRCAE.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. We'll go to our studio guests in a moment, but first I want to bring in MPBN's Patty White, who's been covering this Kennebunk prostitution story since it first broke. Patty's joining us by phone. Hi, Patty. For those of us who, may have been living under a rock for the past month or two, what is this story about? How does it begin?
Well, in July, Alexis Wright, the owner of a Zumba dance studio in Kennebunk, was charged with operating a prostitution business out of that dance studio. And Mark Strong, a businessman from Thomaston, is her alleged business partner. He was charged with promoting prostitution.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
And it started to make a lot of headlines lately because as police have been investigating the case, they've been getting ready to charge some of the alleged clients, and it's expected there are about 150 of them. And when someone's charged with a crime, that information becomes part of the public record. So some of these alleged clients' lawyers have been trying to prevent those names from being publicized.
So we'll go back to the so-called list, as it's been called. But what are the actual charges that Strong and Alexis Wright are facing?
Well, Alexis Wright faces over 100 misdemeanor counts relating to prostitution, and she's also facing three felony accounts for tax evasion and for wrongfully collecting income tax refunds and food assistance. And Mark Strong faces over 50 misdemeanor counts for things like promoting prostitution, invasion of privacy, and conspiracy.
Now, Strong and his attorney have sent signals that there's another story here, that it wasn't about a prostitution operation for him, but an investigation into something else.
Yes. Yeah, so, Mark Strong, he owns an insurance company. He's also a private investigator. And Alexis Wright apparently, he issued a statement last week where he said that Alexis Wright told him she felt that the Kennebunk police were harassing her, so he started to investigate them. And he says that he uncovered some activity in the department that doesn't really shed, you know, them in a positive light. One of those things was a romantic relationship between a female officer and her superior. And so he's saying by uncovering this information, the police department is retaliating against him.
So where are we now in the investigation?
Well, now, in this past week, the lawyers have been meeting because Mark Strong's lawyer, Dan Lilly, has complained that the state is not handing over evidence that they should be handing over, and when they do give any evidence, that it's unorganized. So there have been some meetings between the lawyers and also the judge to make sure that everyone's kind of doing what they're supposed to do. And the judge, Nancy Mills, did say a couple weeks ago that she wants to put this case on the fast track and get it to court soon.
And attorneys representing some of the so-called Johns have tried to prevent those names from being made public. That's failed so far. And in fact, one list of 20-odd names has already been released, and there are more to be released.
Yes, and you know, the Kennebunk Police Department issues biweekly press releases where they list anyone who's been charged with a crime. So that the next press release is due this Friday. So it's entirely possible that there will be another batch of names of alleged clients to this prostitution business.
And the spotlight will continue to shine brightly on this story as well, I'm sure. All right, Patty, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
MPBN's Patty White, who's been covering the Kennebunk prostitution story. Now to our studio guests. Lois Reckitt, Executive Director of Family Crisis Services, and Wendy Chapkus, Professor of Sociology and Director of Women and Gender Studies at the University of Southern Maine. Wendy Chapkus, to you first. Apart from all this media glare and the bright spotlight on this, is this a good opportunity to reconsider some of the policies we have in terms of laws or attitudes toward prostitution in this country?
I think it is. I think that it's always useful when Americans are asked to consider what we have criminalized and what the consequences of those laws are. I think it's interesting that we rarely are concerned about laws against prostitution when it is women being arrested for acts of prostitution. But the big scandal in this case is that clients are now being exposed.
What is your position on prostitution and whether it should be legalized?
I always love it when I'm asked what my position is on something as complicated as prostitution. But I guess in short, I would say that I think prostitution laws harm both women engaged in prostitution and the society in which prostitution is practiced, because it's very expensive to criminalize prostitution offenses.
You've lived in other places where it has been legal. How would you compare the experiences there versus what we have here?
Well, I lived in the Netherlands for many years, and the Netherlands has legal prostitution. It is not illegal to sell or to buy sexual services in that country, and in fact, it's fairly highly regulated. And I was confronted by prostitution pretty much every day. When I bicycled home from the office, I'd bicycle past women sitting behind windows selling sexual services. And as a feminist, I was sort of confused. I wondered whether or not it was their choice in any sense to be sitting there, whether they had other employment opportunities, whether they were subject to violence at the hands of clients. I wondered what it meant that it was legal to do prostitution in the Netherlands and so forth. So when I moved back to the United States to go to graduate school, I started to study prostitution more formally and was very interested in comparing what the consequences were for workers, for women that is, working in the sex industry in a country like the Netherlands where it was legal compared to a country like the United States where it's largely illegal. Again, I came at it from the position of a feminist who was very concerned about the safety and well-being of women. And I think I initially thought, well, as many feminists do, well, it must be a good thing that prostitution is criminalized because, after all, we don't want prostitution because it's sexual objectification of women or something. But as I started interviewing women who worked in the sex trades in the United States and the Netherlands, I discovered that there were several very significant advantages to women who were working in the sex industry in countries where it was legal. And the most fundamental among those was that the police become a resource for women rather than another obstacle or another threat. And in an industry where there is a high level of violence, in the United States at least, it was very important to me to imagine what would happen if a woman who was faced with an aggressive or violent client didn't feel that she could call the police because she would risk arrest. So I became convinced over the course of 10 years or so of research that it was much better for women in the sex trades to work in places where the sex industry was not criminalized.
Lois Reckitt, you take a different view?
Well, in many ways, but not in every way. I do believe that the base problem is the objectification of women in the media, in the general population's thought process around prostitution. I tend not to talk about it as prostitution. I tend to talk about it as prostituted women because I feel that we have the accent on the wrong syllable, and we really need to do, as Wendy says, be concerned about the health and well-being of women. But I'm also come at it from the years of working with teenagers and my concerns around the growing problem of human trafficking, which when we looked at our own statistics, in the last 6 months, we've helped 31 victims of trafficking in Portland. So,
can you explain what that is?
What that means is predominantly is young girls who are being lured into prostitution in order to make money for somebody other than themselves. And a lot of there's a route between Maine and Florida where girls are trafficked. So girls are recruited in Maine sometimes and brought other places to engage in the sex industry. And the money is going to pimps and other people who are profiting from it, not to mention the pornography industry, which is huge.
Is there a difference, though, between a woman who is by her own choice selling sex acts versus someone who has virtually been kidnapped and placed into forced labor, which I would assume is a crime all of its own?
Right. There is a difference, and I think that but the differences are not as stark as one might like to think. The question is, what is it that drives women to do this? Is it, in fact, their own free choice? That's a debate in every single case as to whether their upbringing and surroundings and or their situation at present has caused them to have no resources but to go in that direction, or whether they are people who genuinely want to do this for work. So there's a wide range of people.
Wendy Chapka, how do you see that? Is there a difference there between those two cases?
There absolutely is. I mean, sex trafficking, like any kind of trafficking, and most forms of trafficking do not involve sex, incidentally. Most forms of trafficking are slavery-like conditions in America's factories and fields and domestic labor. But in any case, that is a crime of its own. It is a serious crime, and it is a crime that I think deserves law enforcement resources. I think consenting adults selling and buying sexual services are in an entirely different category, and I really do think it's problematic when the two get collapsed.
There is some confusion here because on the one hand, there's pornography. That's not illegal. What is it? Where's the line? Help us define the line between selling all this sexuality in some form or another versus where we enter into prostitution.
Well, I think it's very difficult to draw that line. When I was doing my research, I interviewed people in all sectors of the sex industry, including porn stars and people who were working in prostitution, and it became very clear to me that you can sell sex. You can sell the sex act as long as it's being filmed by somebody for broadcast somewhere. But if you have that same sex act with that same person and it is not being filmed, it's prostitution and it's illegal. It makes very little sense.
Then you get to the place where women who have been filmed in that way, who might have either been truly or thinking they were consenting adults at the time, who then change their mind and want those images to go away, there's no way for that to happen. So it's the problem that comes up with teenagers these days around the whole issue of sexting and taking sexually suggestive pictures on cell phones, and all of a sudden they're broadcast everywhere by usually someone who they thought they loved. And so it's really a problematic piece on where you draw those lines. We work with teens all the time trying to help them understand they need to make decisions about where they're going to draw their own personal lines, and that's one place that you have to consider.
So in terms of public policy, Lois, are we where we should be in terms of the laws that have been set up that keep the legal boundaries that we've defined around these various forms?
Well, they're extraordinarily hard to enforce. And I think that Wendy and I would disagree on whether they ought to exist at all. But the reality for me is if they exist, they ought to treat prostituted women and the Johns exactly the same in the sense of the arrest and penalties, which has not been the case ever, in my view, at least in the state of Maine.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Thursday, MPBN hosts a debate between the candidates in Maine's 2nd Congressional District, Maine Senate President Kevin Ray and U.S. Representative Mike Michaud. If you have a question for the candidates, submit it at mpbn.net/yourvote or on MPBN's Facebook page. And join us for the Your Vote 2012 2nd Congressional District Debate on radio, television, and online at mpbn.net.
Join us for live Your Vote 2012 coverage of this debate tomorrow evening at 8 on MPBN Radio and Television. The debate will be rebroadcast Friday afternoon at 1 on MPBN Radio and Friday evening at 9 on MPBN Television.
On Super Thursday, amazing things happen here at MPBN Radio. Volunteers come in from all around the state to our studios in Bangor and Portland. And your MPBN Radio friends remind you about the importance of your support to keep this public service alive. New, rejoining members, folks upgrading to Evergreen or making additional gifts, everybody works together by calling or visiting mpbn.net, and the entire campaign is over in just one day. Super Thursday, October 25th, and the good news, of course, is called Friday, complete with regular programming. Thanks for doing your part.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Androscoggin Bank's Wealth Management Group, building client confidence with financial planning and investment advice. Details and disclosures at androscoggintrust.com. By The Plant Home, offering assisted and independent living in private apartments overlooking the Kennebec River in Bath, planthome.org. And by the Franco-American Heritage Center in Lewiston, presenting a piano series concert this Friday at 7:30, featuring Greg Pauly performing Beethoven's Sonata No. 32.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about prostitution, sex trafficking, and other issues. With me in the studio, Lois Reckitt, Executive Director of Family Crisis Services, and Wendy Chapkis, Professor of Sociology, Director of Women and Gender Studies at the University of Southern Maine. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We heard Patty White at the top of the show talk about the charges involved here. Most of them, for the prostitution charges, or engaging a prostitute or whatever, are misdemeanors. It seems the most serious charges are tax evasion related. There are those who argue, why not in this era where everything has a financial angle to it, why not simply legalize this, tax it, and get some sort of social benefit out of it as well? Wendy Chapkis?
Well, I do think that we should look at prostitution in terms of dollars and cents, among other things. And one of the things that's true about the criminalization of prostitution is that it's extremely expensive. It costs thousands of dollars to prosecute each to investigate, prosecute, and adjudicate each prostitution arrest. That's a lot of money. It's very much, in my mind, like drug crime, where the money that is going to prosecuting drug crimes could be much better used to prosecute more serious crimes. I feel the same way about prostitution. And certainly but with both drugs and prostitution, say marijuana and prostitution at least, it seems to me that rather than tapping taxpayers' resources, we could be considering how we would like to regulate these businesses and have them add to the tax coffers by paying taxes on services.
Lois Reckitt?
Well, it's hard for me to think about that when I come from an era when we didn't even want to take money from Playboy magazine, which now seems totally bland. But reality is, I think that there's a way that the money is, I don't know, it feels like a red herring to me. I agree that we should not spend inordinate amounts of money prosecuting prostitution. I don't believe we generally do. But I think that what happens is that because I'm looking at from the lens of the 4,000 women in Portland a year or the Cumberland County that we help with domestic violence, And the cases that are involved, over half of them, well over half of them, have sexual components, have pornography components, have women being forced into acts that their partners believe are appropriate because they've seen them in pornography. And I think that those kinds of acting out pieces that happen to women who are in both heterosexual and lesbian and gay and men in gay relationships, it's just not good. And I think that the reality is that we dance around this topic perpetually. And I don't think that it's a healthy way to live for the general population.
Much has been made of the public reaction to the list. Should it be released? Should it not be released? We can't release it because it would embarrass and hurt the innocent families of the Johns. But we should release it because shaming is an effective way to discourage this sort of. Well, Wendy Chapkus, what's your take on what do we get out of, I guess, this exercise of the list or whether to publish or not?
Well, it's certainly titillating. I think that's the big fascination right now. Maybe it's because I'm a lesbian, but I find it extremely distressing that people are being publicly shamed, in some cases losing their jobs. I think one person has already had to resign his job because he was on the prostitution client list. That people are paying very high prices indeed for being associated with a stigmatized sexual practice. And, you know, again, it for me is very reminiscent of the public shaming of particularly men arrested for having sex with men. Acts that seem to me they should be personal and private and not splashed on the front page of the newspaper. And so I'm rather distressed.
Lois?
Well, you know, I have to say the one man who I think we're talking about who either resigned or lost his coaching job on account of him being on the list, the reality is, what does that say about him as a coach of young men? It just doesn't jive with me as someone who should be a role model for young men or young women. Frankly, I don't remember which kind of coach he was. You know, I'm thinking to the ways that they deal with domestic violence in China, and shaming is one of the ways that they deal with it. Once the workplace, if that doesn't work, they do ramifications in the workplace. But if that doesn't work, at least 10 years ago, they were putting the faces of the men on television and shaming them. And I think that is an effective way to make people stop doing things.
Mike says on Facebook, yes, prosecute and publicize both the prostitutes and the men who rent prostitutes equally. Shaming works. That's Mike's point of view. Let's go to the phones now to Yarmouth and bring Jan into the conversation. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Thanks so much for answering my question or discussing it at least.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
The question I have is there's a country, and I do wish I knew the specific name of it, but it's in the Scandinavian countries, and they have done a really good job in prosecuting those who are using the services of a prostitute. They have decreased, they have not legalized prostitution, but they've actually, as was suggested by the Facebook comment, they have prosecuted all involved, and it's decreased their prostitution by like 80%. And so why wouldn't that possibly, I'd like to hear from both of you to discuss, why wouldn't there be more of a enforcement of the rules that are already laws are already in place in our country?
Okay.
Okay, actually, the country you're talking about is Sweden, and it is not, in fact, true that prostitution is criminalized. Prostitution is legal. What they did in 1999 was pass a law to punish clients. So workers, sex workers are still legally allowed to sell sex. It's just clients are not allowed to buy it. And similar laws have been passed in Norway and Iceland. And it has not, in fact, reduced prostitution by a significant amount. What it has done is reduced visible street prostitution significantly. It's pushed prostitution into the underground sector, and it has also pushed it across the border. So the data that I've seen suggests that more men are going to Denmark, across the border to Denmark, for prostitution services because it's still legal in Denmark, or are going to the underground sex trade. And just as an aside, one of the real problems with that is it makes it much more difficult for sex workers to have a full and frank negotiation with a client if the client has to worry about being arrested. The client doesn't want to, you know, sit in their car and have a long conversation about what the particular sexual practices are that that sex worker is willing to do, what kind of safer sex techniques need to be used, and so forth, because they have to be very concerned that they're going to be arrested.
And we're talking here about progressive countries. I guess I tend to think of Scandinavia as such, and certainly the Netherlands. But we have Nevada here in our own country, which is closer to home and sort of more like, I think, us in some ways. How has it worked there? Is there evidence there that there are benefits to legalizing them?
Well, Nevada, in case people don't know, it was in 1971 that the state of Nevada legalized brothels in rural counties. So brothels are not legal in Las Vegas or Reno, but in rural counties, they're allowed to set up brothels. And there are, they have been since 1971, approximately 30 brothels that are operating legally. Highly, highly controlled prostitution, a very problematic model, I think, in many ways. But the main advantage for sex workers is that it's legal, so they don't have to fear arrest, and it's it provides a fair amount of safety from violence by at the hand of clients. There's virtually no reported incidents of sexual assault or of clients not using. There's mandatory condom use in Nevada brothels, and virtually no evidence of clients flouting that rule. The problem with Nevada is that, or the Nevada model is that workers have to live on the premises of the brothel for the 3-week period of their contract. They can't, in some instances, can't leave the brothel. If they're married and have children, their families can't live in the town. So it's this sort of very strict segregation of the brothels from the community. But, oh, and the other point is the women have to split their earnings with the house. So they are giving half of their earnings up to the brothel owner. And women are not allowed to work independently.
Lois Reckitt, isn't there some degree of, I guess, like a system of safety and protection, health protection, a physical protection, if you institute a legalized system?
Well, the question for me is, why do we live in a world where we have to have that kind of protection for people who are engaged in an industry, if in fact that industry is legitimate? I mean, we would not allow, you know, people working in a machine tool shop to get the crap beat out of them. You know, so I think it's like we have to look at our views on prostitution in general and whether or not we want to take this so-called industry and have it be in the mainstream. And I don't want it to be there. I worry about Las Vegas itself, for instance. I mean, I've talked to people who just are so distressed by walking down the street and being handed flyers and offers of prostitution on the street. Now, they're probably not legal, but they're there every 10 yards or more. So it's not really, I mean, prostitution is controlled in the brothels in the rural areas in a way that doesn't sound especially spectacular for the women who are doing the work, but in the rest of the state, it's still very problematic.
Let's go to Augusta and Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. Is there ever a case when men are the prostitutions and the women are paying for the service?
Yeah.
Wendy?
Just curious.
Yeah.
In the state of Maine, did you ask?
Yes.
That I don't know. I don't know whether – I mean, assuming there are. There probably are male sex workers servicing women clients. Women are much more likely, though, to be the worker, and men much more likely to be the client. There are also, of course, male prostitutes working selling sexual services to men. I think that it's safe to say that women clients are among the minority of clients in the sex industry.
So if a man was selling, he was the prostitute, and would he go through the same thing that's happening in Kennebunk? I mean, would he be arrested?
It's illegal regardless of the sex of
right.
the worker.
Okay. That's my question. Thank you.
But do you think that the, and this is speculation, but would the story play out the same way? It's a male Zumba instructor. I mean, it would be a slightly different thing. I can't articulate it.
If you were talking about a female client and a male, a female John and a male client, the titillation rate would be sky high. I think that that's really not happening. In Maine, at least, that we've ever heard of. But the reality is how it plays out in the gay male community is another question. And it would be, I think, treated slightly differently.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. Please stay with us.
I'm Renee Montaigne. At Morning Edition, producers, editors, and hosts all leave the studio and go out into the world to bring you stories. That's how I came to meet Tahira, her burqa thrown off, learning English to become a doctor. In Kandahar today, studying could get her killed. She hopes it will help her save her troubled country. That's Afghanistan. This is NPR.
Hi, this is Mark Vogelsang, president of MPBN. I'm still getting to know many of you in my new job and learning about this great state of Maine. And I'm very pleased with everything so far. But one thing continues to surprise and amaze me, and that's your over-the-top enthusiastic support for this radio station. It's very clearly evident in the Super Thursday one-day on-air membership campaigns. Did you know that Maine is the envy of the nation? Seriously? Really? I'm not kidding. Everyone is working together so efficiently and quickly to get it all done in just one day. That is a huge wow. And I hope you'll join me and all the others in Maine and elsewhere coming together to support MPBN and NPR News. One day, Super Thursday, this Thursday. Thanks.
Join us immediately following Maine Calling today at 1 o'clock for the Commonwealth Club of California. The guest today is Cecile Richards, President, Planned Parenthood Federation of America and Planned Parenthood Action Fund. That's the Commonwealth Club of California, immediately following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the case for and against the legalization of prostitution. With me in the studio, Wendy Chapkus, professor of sociology at the University of Southern Maine and author of Live Sex Acts, Women Performing Erotic Labor, and Lois Reckitt, executive director of Family Crisis Services. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. We tend to think, I think of this as, it's often, this area of the country is this Puritan bedrock of Puritanism and those sort of moral beliefs. On the other hand, there's a certain libertarianism, which would say, hey, it's none of the government's business what I do and with whom and if we exchange money, et cetera. Are those at odds, Wendy Chapkus, or are not necessarily?
Well, I think that there's a tension between them. That's certainly true. Vice crimes of all kind seem to be at odds with that libertarian impulse. If people are consenting adults and they're engaging in various kinds of sexual practices or drug use, there is an argument, both a libertarian argument, but also, I think, other kinds of arguments that the state should have little or no role. Where I would disagree is I don't actually think there is no role for the state. I think we do want to have controls over these practices to some extent so that we can ensure safety and well-being of participants. But what kind of controls, I think, is where the interesting conversation comes in. And certainly I think we enhance the risks of those practices when we take the policies of prohibition.
I mean, the reality is what we really want, I speak like I was the world, but anyway, what I really want is for people not to want to engage in misogynistic violence. And I think that that's the problem is how do you get people not to want not to do that without criminal sanctions? That's really the base question, I think.
Can I just add to Lois's comment there? She works in domestic violence, and she just mentioned that there were 4,000 domestic violence cases in Cumberland County alone, and those are in, many of them, in legal heterosexual marriages. And, you know, it seems to me the case that it is not nobody, at least nobody that I've heard, Lois certainly not, advocating that we should criminalize marriage because it is, in fact, very dangerous to some of the participants in it. Instead, we think we need to educate people that it is wrong to use violence within the institution of marriage or within the institution of prostitution. It's the violence that's the problem.
And in the case of trafficking, kidnapping, forced labor.
Child labor, all of those things are already criminal offenses.
Lois, can we separate those out, criminalize those, and leave the rest of it to
Maybe, but what you have to figure out is how you help women empower themselves to draw the lines they need to draw for their own psyche. Because I want women to be able to draw their own lines, not to have to necessarily accept the lines that are drawn by the people who are engaging in sex acts with them.
Or the people who are policing those sex acts.
Right.
All right, let's go to Dan Riscotta and Richard. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I have a comment, more of a comment. I agree with both people, both of your guests. But the fact is, prostitution should be legal, primarily because crimes in this country, crime is a big business in this country, and people don't want to see things legal like drugs. We fought the drug war for years and years. We fought prostitution since time began. You know, they always call it the world's oldest profession. And to think, for example, in Kennebunk, wherever it was, that they had a detective assigned full-time for 3 months, state police detectives assigned full-time for months on end. And it just seems ridiculous to me. I mean, in this country at this time, with all the things going on like domestic violence and women beaten up by their significant others, there's case after case, if you read the court news and domestic violence, someone hauled in for domestic violence in this area, for example. I've seen it in the court news recently. Probably there will be some today when the paper comes out that, you know, some guy is hauled in for domestic violence. You get 6 months in jail, all suspended, and a year's probation. Where some guy, the whole thing has to be, we need to look at what's going on in this country. We imprison more people for more things than any country in the world.
Yeah, let's bring in the guests.
Is it true?
Yeah. Do you think there's a change in sort of public sentiment about sort of prosecuting these sorts of crimes?
I do. I think that we are looking, as the caller just said, we imprison more people in the United States per capita than any other country in the world by far. And many of those crimes are drug crimes, so another sort of consenting adult behavior. And it's also true that prostitution offenses are expensive. I read in the paper, I think it was a year ago or so, about a case in South Portland where a woman was brought a John to, or met a John in a hotel. It turned out it was a sting operation, and the John was a police officer, and the sex worker realized that. But they had the sex worker with the police officer, and they had three or four other police officers in the adjoining hotel room. I mean, it was this huge amount of police resources to arrest one woman, an adult, a woman who was in her 40s, for having the temerity to ask for sex, ask for money for sex. And I think that, you know, people are looking at reduced budgets, at high demands on our tax dollars, and saying, is this really how we want to spend our tax dollars?
Does it take away from other enforcement efforts that might be more?
Frankly, in my view, probably it does. I mean, we're in total agreement about incarceration rates and the fact that we're incarcerating the wrong people, and that what I want personally incarcerated are people who commit violent offenses. Now, which could exclude much of the drug prosecution, not all of it, but much of it, in the same kind of way that it might exclude much of the prostitution prosecution, but not every last bit of it, because I think that there is some element of violence in a lot of these pieces, And again, I would separate out the whole trafficking issue, which I think is really violent to its core.
Yeah, let's go to Brunswick and Vicki. Hi, Vicki. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My question is really for Wendy. I'm curious about your thoughts on the reality that we live in a culture where there is a serious power dynamic between men and women, and how that would feed into legalizing prostitution and what that would look like.
Well, you're absolutely right. There are huge inequities, power inequities, material inequities between men and women still in the 21st century. That's true for all sectors of society, not just the sex work sector. So I think we need to continue to insist on equality between the sexes. Now, the question is, and this is where feminists disagree, is whether prostitution is an impediment to equality between men and women. I don't think it necessarily is. And I think what we need to do is recognize that sex still is a loaded terrain for women. Women can be shamed and stigmatized regardless of whether they accept money for sex. Simply having too much sex and being a slut is a problem for a lot of women. So I think we need to work on our attitudes around sex and around gender. And I think we need to recognize that in countries that have legalized prostitution, they also, many of them, have much less in the way of inequality between the sexes in other ways. New Zealand, for instance, has decriminalized sex, sex work, and has better rates of gender equality. So I don't think the two are necessarily connected.
But we've got about a minute left here. We're doing this show because of this case. Let's face it, all the attention that's come to it. But is it time? I'll give you each 30 seconds. Is it time to go back to the Maine legislature and propose changes right now, Wendy Chapkus?
I think it's always time to talk, to have this conversation, to ask whether this is how we want our tax dollars used. Do we want to spend police resources prosecuting prostitution? I think not.
Yeah. Lois Reckitt?
Good luck with that conversation.
You don't think that's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. And I'm not convinced we're at the place where it could happen in a way that was constructive. But in reality, I just don't think it'll happen.
Once this story dies down and plays out, we'll move along to something else.
Well, and women will still get victimized, whether in prostitution or in their homes. And that's really the critical piece for me.
And people who are engaged in non-normative sexual practices will still be shamed and blamed.
All right. Lois, Wendy, thank you both for being here today. Lois Reckitt, Executive Director of Family Crisis Services. Wendy Chapkus, a professor of sociology and director of women and gender studies at the University of Southern Maine. She's the author of many articles on prostitution and policies and the author of the book, Live Sex Acts, Women Performing Erotic Labor. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Volunteer Lucas Randall Owens answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, getting your home ready for winter. We'll talk about weatherization. And don't forget, tomorrow is Super Thursday. We hope you'll show support for programs like Maine Calling by making a pledge. Tune in tomorrow and find out how. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.